E pluribus unum. That's the guidance our founders gave us. They couldn't imagine how many we would be or how different we'd be from each other. They want us to remember that we are one. So when we go down this path, we want it to be as unifying for our country, not dividing. And that's why we want it to be the strongest possible case. Lincoln said, President Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. Well, in order for the public to have the sentiment, the public has to know. So I hope you will be messengers of the truth to the public. We think today was really a milestone in making that that sentiment be more informed. Thank you all very much.
First of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a coat?
Your thoughts on how we process that information?
Well, I thought it was a powerful column, and it's the idea it wasn't Mueller's fault, it was ours. And part of that is, look, realistically, a 448-page report, if it's hard for people to read, they're working, it's hard for anybody to read. Mm-hmm. We in the media didn't do a good enough job of summarizing it in a kind of a bite-sized way. It took us too long. The Democrats could have done the same thing. Like, why not get everything on a 3x5 card that we just say over and over and over? I mean, that's what you have to do. And the sorry thing is, we put everything on the shoulders of Bob Mueller, and he obviously is not a partisan, and he didn't want to be part of that.
We also let Bob Barr, like Olivia Pope, this whole situation.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, the testimony, the reactions, the speaker, the media, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a little while. So you remember yesterday when we were talking about Florida? We discovered that Florida said we're all idiots. Didn't take long for the Congress and to tell the media that pretty much the same thing. All those people are idiots. And you people in the media, you need to fix it for them. We're all idiots. What else is new? I'm right. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. You can use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to DaveBowmanShow.com or PlausiblyLive.com, and you can find the show on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show. Ego Bibere Capulis et Olive Verve. I drink coffee that others might live. So, this is kind of a weird show today. This is very much a shoot-from-the-hip show. I had a show prep. I have a show that we were supposed to do today prepped. It's all done, everything's done for it, but it required an interview to be handled, and that interview, for reasons that aren't really relevant here, didn't happen. It's supposed to happen today at 2 o'clock, which means that then I'll have the show ready to go. But here's the problem. I'm probably going to have to release it this weekend as kind of maybe a special thing. It is a special show anyway. It's not really the normal show that I would normally do. So probably we'll release it this weekend. And the reason being that some stuff has come up and I'm not really prepared yet to talk about it in detail, but I have a major commitment for the next week. And so the likelihood of there being shows at all next week is very, very low. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, because depending on how things work, maybe it will, but the likelihood is that I will not be here next week. And there's some deep reasons for it. There's some considerations for it that I need to process a little bit better, be ready to better explain to you. I feel like I owe you that. And so that's the bottom line is I've got to handle those things next week and then go on from there. So that makes this show kind of a shoot from the hip sort of show. It makes it kind of, what's on your mind, Dave, sort of show, as opposed to actually sitting down and rooting through stuff and coming up with ideas and that's the hardest part of this whole thing is, because anybody can sit here and just parrot what other people have said and other people believe. Anybody can do that. In fact, that's one of the things that I used to get frustrated with in talk radio was I was literally told by a program director at one point to basically just repeat everything Hannity said. It's like any moron can do that. I can see, and maybe you think that, maybe I think the same thing that Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh thinks. Maybe it's not likely, but maybe it's true that I do. But at the same time, what's the point of just doing that over again? And so I could sit here and rant and rail about the testimony and how can Bob Mueller not know nothing about fusion GPS and blah, 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 blah. I can do all that, but you don't want to hear that. You can get that anywhere. Just turn on your AM dial or, you know, log on to your website. You can get that. You don't need that from me. You're smart enough to figure that out on your own. Unlike the state of Florida, which still believes, as we learned yesterday, that you are unable to make informed choices about, in this case, dietitians and nutritionists, and that if you make those wrong choices, it can endanger us. Well, you know, the same kind of thing applies here. If you can't make informed choices, then how in the world is the government of the United States going to figure out whether or not you're capable of understanding what's really happening here? So it's the reaction to the Mueller testimony that has just absolutely enthralled me. I mean, it really has. And then in the middle of all that, I got to talking with a good friend of mine, a Milsurp writer who runs his own history blog. And it's a very good blog. It's linked on today's page. So I know normally I say that I'll link it up on the page and then I forget to do it. Today, I have not forgotten to do that. It is linked up because I've already written the page for today. It is linked up on there. And so you can, in fact, read that blog. And if you're a history person who likes philosophy, the Milsurp writer is for you. He's a combat veteran. He's a younger guy, but he's got some pretty good things to say. And I really enjoy not just reading his writing, but I enjoy the back and forth that he and I have developed through the time. So I want you to check that out. It's really good. I was just absolutely blown away by this yesterday. Anyway, he and I got into a conversation that was tangentially related to this because it has to do with how we perceive history, how we perceive what we believe to be history and how it affects our modern day. Politicians will pick and choose the parts of history that they like that you know, make their point, as it were, which is kind of what Nancy Pelosi was doing. She was out there at her presser talking about E Pluribus Unum. We want to impeach President Trump, but we have to do it in a way that unites everybody. We can't have any, you know, if it's too divisive, then that's not what the framers and the founders of this country wanted. Is what she wants you to believe is what she meant, as opposed to what she was really saying, which was, we can't win. We don't have the votes. We don't hold the Senate. So really, it's an exercise in stupidity in political terms. And the cost of it could be massive if we're not, you know, really careful here. But she couched it in terms of history. And so when Mike and I were talking about that, it really kind of hit home with me that this is what we're talking about. This idea that history has become, I don't want to say politicized or weaponized, but reality is we see this all the time. Oh, Trump is Hitler. And see these comparisons? Did you know that Hitler behaved just like Trump? And on the other side, you say, well, parties are, you know, disarming people and restricting free speech. And who did that? And Godwin's law seems to go out the window. All right. For those of you not familiar with Godwin's law, that's, you know, anytime you're in an argument or a discussion or debate, whoever goes to the Nazis first loses automatically. It doesn't seem to apply anymore. I'm not sure what the deal with that is, but people can't wait to run to the Nazi element of all this. And while Nancy Pelosi herself has not done that, at least not that I've seen, plenty of people have. And you know, you probably know some of them. Personally, it doesn't, I mean, I was on websites today where people were we're going there because Trump's a Nazi. Did you know that? And my response to that every time somebody says that to me is, really? Once upon a time, Nazis drove 900 Jews out onto a frozen river and then shelled the river so that the Jews would fall into the icy water and die. That's a historical fact. Has Donald Trump done anything like that? Or for those of you on the other side, did Barack Obama do anything like that? No. For me, particularly as a Jewish person, this idea of going to the Nazis on everything is a little bit problematic for me. I got issues with it because, number one, you'd be hard-pressed to find any American politician, any Western democracy politician who really is a quote-unquote Nazi. I mean, there just aren't any, folks. You may not like them, and you may find parallels to them, but that's the problem, is that, like Nancy Pelosi in her E Pluribus Unum speech there, we're drawing parallels to things without considering the entirety of it, without considering what's really going on. It's as if somehow or another we've forgotten that the Greek god of history, the Greek god of history, there was one. Did you know that? Yeah. The Greeks had gods and goddesses for everything. Cleo was her name, which literally translates as bringing to remembrance, which is kind of what history is, isn't it? Cleo's job, she almost always appears with a scroll, and her task was to bring people to remembrance, to remind everyone that was involved in a conversation about someone's past and someone's influence and someone's effect on things. And this is what she did as a Greek goddess. And of course, there's not a whole lot of, you know, stuff about it, but you get the idea. You get the understanding of how even the Greeks understood this concept that history was important, but at the same time, it was important that it be personal. It was important that it be connective, not just used in a way that was, beneficial politically. And this is part of what Mike and I were getting to today was the further we get away from history. Now, look, I have a lot of books. I love history books. I can read history books all day long. I can sit here and read, not all of those are history books, but I can read history. Today, I got home and Cammie and I we needed to get out of the house kind of thing, and the kids were all gone. So we went out and went to a very inexpensive restaurant, let me be clear about that, where we kind of sat and had a little chit-chat about some things. And, you know, we're concerned about some of the issues facing our household and some of the issues facing us. And so, needless to say, one of the things we got to cut back on is discretionary spending. We need to kind of rein some of that in a little bit. And no sooner had I gotten home today from that, she went to take care of some stuff that she was working on. I came up here, logged in, got my email, and I got an email from Amazon. Dave, you might be interested in this book. Okay. I clicked on it because it's what I do. And there were two things that attracted me about the book. Number one, it was about a subject that very much interests me, which is the Federalist and Democrat-Republican argument over the Alien and Sedition Act in 1798, and it was only $1.99 in Kindle format. It was on sale. Dave, you can save $16 on this on the Kindle format. I thought, crap, this whole discussion about, you know, cutting back on things, and I get clicked by now because, like, I have copious free time. I read all these history books, but the problem with this book, and the problem with almost all of these books, is while they draw from research of source material, they are not themselves source material, which means that they inherently contain the biases and opinions, whether spoken or not, whether written or not, they contain the inherent biases of the author. So, for example, if I were to ever write a book about World War II naval combat, you can assume that that book is going to be very heavily in the belief that submarines were the decisive weapon. Whereas if someone who was a pilot wrote one, aircraft carriers would be the decisive weapon. And if someone who was on a destroyer was to write one, they might favor, you know, look, none of those ships were going anywhere without destroyers. And quite frankly, as I learned this week about fleet tugs, nobody was, you know, without the fleet tugs, the floating dry docks, without the oilers, it all works together. But somehow or another, we get our biases built into this thing. And that it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does take away from the source idea. And one of the things in military strategy is, you know, Dwight Eisenhower's great quote, amateurs discuss tactics, professionals discuss logistics. And there's a lot of truth in that, but almost no one pays attention to it. The farther we get away from that source material, we have all these books that you know, are written by great historians, Bruce Catton, Michael Grant, so forth and so on, that I love. But Samuel Eliot Morrison, I have the whole collection of Samuel Eliot Morrison's World War II, the Navy in World War II. Silent Victor, U.S. Submarine, Theodore Roscoe's submarine books. I have, you know, down here, I've got some broader history books, Civil War, Vietnam War, Cold War. But they're not the source materials, which means that they are inherently, and not necessarily negatively, but inherently they are biased by what the author believes or thinks or understands. And the further we get away from that source material, the less we really understand what was really the thought processes of the people who were there. This is why it's so critical, I think, particularly when we're studying the Constitution, particularly when we're studying history in America, that we find ourselves in those writings of those. Man, they left them for us. Why do we ignore them? Why would we rather read some book by a professor, a law professor at Cornell today, than who tells us what Thomas Jefferson meant when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, as opposed to what Thomas Jefferson wrote about what he meant when he wrote the Declaration of Independence? Do you see the problem? It's not that those books don't have value. It's not that the things in them don't have value. But as we get further and further away from it, we lose that connection, that direct connection to the history, which might prove to us to be different than perhaps we have, decided what it means. Nancy Pelosi has decided that E Pluribus Unum, from many one, means very clearly and very succinctly that if we impeach President Trump, it has to be a unifying act. And that Mueller's testimony was, you know, a big part of that. It was a big step in the right direction, she said. And we need the media, you people, she was talking to media members, we need you people in the media to say that. We need you to say that this would, you know, we need you to be truth. We need you to be truthers about all this stuff. And so she was literally standing there saying to these people, look, the American people are idiots, and you need to explain it to them. And it wasn't but a couple hours later that the MSNBC person that you heard there at the top of the hour started literally saying essentially the same thing, which was that, look, the reason that the Mueller testimony was so underwhelming, the reason that Bob Mueller's testimony is, you know, damaging to the idea that we should impeach, the reason why Americans aren't up in arms right now with pitchforks rushing out yelling, impeach Trump, the reason they're not doing it is because we failed. We did not explain it to you in bite-sized chunks because you all are a bunch of idiots and you're not capable of understanding this without us translating it for you. Getting away from the actual, the Mueller report's right there, but we have to have it processed by these folks into 3x5 index cards so that we then can understand it because, you know, we don't have time and we're too stupid to understand it anyway. It's remarkable to me that this, not only is it remarkable to me that this is what they think, that this is the way the thought processes that are going in there, because I've known that for a long time. I've talked before about one of my favorite days was getting invited to that writer's panel all those years ago. It was a great day. I met Nate Scott that day, the most positive person I met. But I also met people that were insane, including a Stockton record reporter, and I've long forgotten his name, but he was at the other end of the table, and he literally said, I wrote it down in my notes for that day, he literally said, you can write a headline and a story so that the reader comes to the quote-unquote correct conclusion. In other words, we don't have to give you facts. We have to massage stuff so that you get the right. And because most people don't even read the articles, they just read the headlines. You have to time the headlines so that it impels the correct response without them even reading the story. I've known that for years, but now we've got the media on television saying, look, we need to condense this thing down into 3x5 cards that we just keep repeating over and over again. Nancy Pelosi saying we need to remember our history, e pluribus unum, from many one, because, you know, we have to be united in our hatred of Donald Trump. And until we're all united in that hatred, you know, impeachment would be divisive. And that's not good either, which is really what she's saying, again, is we'd lose and we don't want to lose, which is kind of what Mike was driving at. This, we're getting to the point now where we judge politicians not by what they actually say, but by how they deflect a question. Nancy Pelosi was asked whether or not they would proceed with impeachment of President Trump. Nope, e pluribus unum. We have to be united. What? It's like, well, at some point you just pull your hair back and you go, I don't know where you're going with this. I really don't. Nancy, what the hell are you talking about? Because e pluribus unum, chosen as the motto for the United States of America, literally, I don't even know how you could draw that into history, that history into this and go, see, that's what it means. It means that if we impeach a president, we're supposed to be united. No, it didn't. It had nothing to do with that. Nobody who sat in that committee and said, e pluribus unum should be our motto, not a single person in that committee ever thought to themselves, yes, if we ever have to impeach a president, the Speaker of the House should go out in front of everybody and say, we've got to be united on this. In fact, they understood that impeachment was a political act. They said that. And they understood that there would be issues with it. That's why they made it hard. That's why they made it difficult to impeach someone, because they understood inherently that it was a political act and that it was a political issue. And so if a president, you know, murdered a guy in office, I don't really think anybody would have an issue with charging him, indicting him. And you know, the vote would be 435-0 in the House, and it would be 100-0 in the Senate to impeach him. And I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. But when we're talking about crimes that are alleged, that are nebulous at best, and that basically everybody on that stage is probably to some degree or another guilty of, how are we supposed to react? How are we supposed to be united by this? How are we the idiots in this country? We the people that have been told that we're stupid. We can't make an informed choice about anything because we haven't been fed it by either our government or our media. How are we supposed to make up our mind and go, well, that's, you know, that's just crazy. We can't. I don't get it. I don't. But this idea that she uses history, the idea that she goes back to our motto, this idea that she draws about the founders and the framers of the country without talking about what they said about it is problematic for me. Because, again, this is what was Mike and I were talking about, this idea of using history, you know, picking and cherry picking the bits of pieces of history we like so that it matches our political positions, kind of like theology. I mean, how often do we talk about the fact that people go through the Bible and they pick and choose the parts they like? They pick and choose the part that supports their theology. But if something doesn't support their theology, they either just ignore it or they say, well, that was just translated wrong. You know, well, OK, let's get back to the original language then, shall we? Kind of approach to that. That's always my favorite. Well, they just mistranslated it. Okay, tell me what the right translation is. Well, don't bother, because I already know that the right translation, the correct translation, according to you, will mean what you want it to mean. But that still doesn't solve my problem, because I don't speak ancient Hebrew, and neither do you. So we're back to that problem, but the advantage we have when it comes to the Constitution, when it comes to the history of our country, is it's all written in English. It's not that complicated. And we can, in fact, go back and read those things. I'm not saying we shouldn't read history books, and I don't think Mike is getting to that either. I really don't. But one of the things that he said in his blog today was that, or yesterday, I'm sorry, was the quote from Getting It. We do not learn from our history because our studies are brief and prejudiced. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that our ideology needs to make sure that we're not just quoting, you know, E pluribus unum for political advantages, when we should be remembering Historia. We should be remembering Clio. We should be bringing things to mind, because without them, the impact that they have can be watered down if we're not careful. We need to understand that when somebody is out there just saying, see, this is exactly like what Adolf Hitler did, or this is exactly like Joseph Stalin, or this is exactly like Abraham Lincoln, or this is exactly like George Washington, you can pretty much be assured that anyone who says that doesn't really know what that's about. And the more important part of that is they're picking, cherry picking a data point, a sentence, an event that supports their ideology, as opposed to recalling, bringing to remembrance all of the history that's involved with that, which is far more complicated when you're dealing with people, isn't it? I mean, think about your own life. How complicated is your life? I know how complicated my life is. Just trying to figure out how I'm going to explain to you what's happening next week is mind-boggling to me. Why would George Washington be any different? He wasn't, folks. And that's the part we need to keep in mind. Anyway, that's the show for today, because I didn't have a plan, and there you go. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You would miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Like I said, we will have a special show this weekend. Stay tuned for it. Check it out at plausiblylive.com. See you later, everybody. Have a great weekend.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.